listening to Radio Albion. Hello, everybody, and welcome to tonight's stream. We're live on Odyssey, we're live on Rumble, we're live on DLive, and we're live on Entropy. Please do share the stream. Obviously, you know, I can't share the stream. I say this every time, but it's one of those things. I'm not allowed to share the stream because I'm not allowed on X. I've never broken the law. I've never been involved in any advocacy for violence or anything like that, but I'm not allowed on X because the system hates me because I tell the unfiltered truth. And I also give the best, most comprehensive takes on things like the thing we're going to be talking about tonight, like events like by-elections. I'm going to give you the unfiltered truth on this. So it's going to be a good stream, so please share it. And let's let a few people filter in before we begin tonight's stream. So I'm going to start by saying I've got a few things planned later in the week. We've got National Stay Team on Sunday. And remember, next Wednesday is a massive episode of PWR as Sam Melia returns. So Sam will be back. It's going to be huge. Well, I hope it's going to be huge. It's going to be his first interview since he was released from prison. He has previously been on pretty repressive restrictions, but those will be lifted officially at midnight tomorrow. So March the 1st, he's officially allowed to talk. He'll be back on his Telegram. He'll be back making content, all sorts. But he's coming on PWR on Wednesday, so look forward to that. And as I said, there's also the National Stay Team, which will be on Sunday. So look forward to that as well. Now, if you like my work, if you like what I do, if you like what Patriotic Alternative does, please consider making a donation. You can do so via Entropy, you can do so via Rumble. Any message attached to a donation will be read out live on stream. They are really, really appreciated if you can donate. It's something I really appreciate. If you give $3, $5, $10, whatever you can afford. Generally speaking, thousands of people watch these streams. And if everyone just gave $3, we'd be very, very well funded, and I'd be very, very grateful for that, obviously. If you can give more, that's also appreciated. You can also donate via cryptocurrency. The crypto currencies are all in the description below. And finally, you can write to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. Now, remember, even if you're not watching this live, if you're watching this live, you can send a message in. I'll read it out on stream. There'll be a Q&A at the end. There's always a Q&A. But if you're not watching this live and you're watching it on replay, you can always send super chats on the replay as well. You can always send Entropy donations or subscribe to me on Rumble, make a paid subscription to me on Rumble. They are $5 a month. You can do that at any time, so that's much appreciated. Anyway, let's get into tonight's stream, because this is going to be an interesting one. It's not going to be as long as last week's, but it does follow on from last week's. It follows on from my one about Restore Britain, and this is sort of setting the stage for what Restore will potentially be going up against in the future. And also, there's quite a few I told you so's on tonight's stream. You obviously know that's my favourite phrase. That's kind of like becoming my catchphrase. But a lot of this is going to be me saying I told you so towards the end, because I kind of predicted most of this. So it's quite interesting. Anyway, please do watch the stream. Watch the stream. It's in entirety. And don't take anything out of context, because there's going to be a lot to say. And we're going to start by going through this logically. Now, obviously, people know that the Gorton and Denton by-election took place yesterday. It was very hard fought, and it was meant to be a three-horse race. It was between the Greens, Labour and Reform. Those were the three parties which were up for winning this. Now, that's interesting in itself, because traditionally the parties that took part in these by-elections and were likely to win were always Labour, Conservative and Lib Dem. And the fact that neither the Conservatives nor the Lib Dems were even in the running is very, very interesting. Obviously, Labour got elected in 2024. They have had 2 years of very, very unpopular policy making. They have plummeted in the polls, and you'd expect at this time in a political party's tenure as a government that the party of opposition, i.e. the Conservatives, would be riding high. They might have had a shock win here, which would have upturned everything, but they didn't really feature. And this all speaks to a lot of what I've spoken about before, this changing political landscape, where hopefully we're going to see the breaking of the old two-party system, which, look, it's what we've seen here on Thursday. So obviously everyone knows the Greens won, which is disastrous. Reform came second. But to say that the two biggest parties were two parties that weren't from the two-party oligarchy, neither Labour nor Conservative were in first or second place. They were both shoved out, Labour shoved into third, and Conservatives didn't even really feature at all. It's very, very interesting. So look, let's start with the actual news. And where best to start but with a little bit of a news report? And look, we're going to get to some salacious stuff later about Ben Habib, Rupert Lowe, the arguments taking place there. All those things are very important. But we are going to start with a bit of a news report. So here we go. And we'll get started here. It's the BBC. We all know who the BBC are. Green Party wins Gorton and Denton by-election, pushing Labour into third place. The Green Party has won the Gorton and Denton by-election, with Hannah Spencer taking the seat from Labour in the Greens' first ever Westminster by-election victory. Now, they had a seat before that they won at the general election down in, I believe it was Brighton, but they've never won a by-election before. Labour, which took the Greater Manchester seat with more than 50% of the vote in 2024, was pushed into third place behind Reform UK, a result which will increase the pressure on Sir Keir Starmer's leadership. In an emotional victory speech, local plumber. Now, look, they keep calling her a plumber. Let's have a look at her. That's her there. Is she a plumber? I'm not going to say she's not, because she could probably sue me for defamation or something ridiculous. Is she a plumber? I don't know. Is she local? They're making out she's some kind of working class hero, but apparently, allegedly, she owns like millions of pounds worth of property. I don't know many local sort of white van man plumbers that own millions of pounds worth of property, but apparently she's a local plumber, the salt of the earth, etc., etc., etc. Do you know what she looks to me? She looks like a skinny little weirdo vegan. I can't imagine her with her arm down a toilet trying to scoop out blockages. But maybe she is, maybe she's not. I'm not saying she's not. I just think it's funny. And I think it's weird that they're trying to make out that she's some sort of working class hero when she's living in sort of a, or she owns millions of pounds worth of property, allegedly. That's not the kind of thing that the average white van man owns. But either way, the poll was triggered by the resignation of former Labour Health Minister Andrew Gwynn, who was suspended from the parliamentary party for offensive WhatsApp messages a year ago. The Greens' victory at Gorton and Denton represents the sixth largest Labour majority to be overturned by a by-election since World War II. In a seat, and this is the important bit, that has been held by the party for nearly 100 years, Spencer received 14,980 votes, nearly 41% of the votes cast, and there was a swing of 26.4% from Labour to the Greens. Reform UK's Matt Goodwin came second with 10,578, while Labour's Angeliki Stogia was third with 9,364. The Conservative Party's Charlotte Cadden came fourth with 706 votes, the party's worst ever by-election result, and the Liberal Democrats' Jackie Piercy had 653. And it gives the top sort of figures here. You can see sort of how it's stacked up. But we're going to go further into this. There's a lot more to say about this. Zach Polanski, the leader of the Green Party, said Gorton and Denton was only the party's 127th target seat, and the victory showed there was no no-go areas for the Green Party. He's a homosexual Jew, by the way. So that's quite interesting, considering they fought on an Islamic ticket, which is very interesting indeed, to have this homosexual Jew fighting on an Islamic ticket is interesting, to say the least. And they really did go in hard on this. I'm actually bringing something up here, which I actually should have brought up and should be in my sort of I can't find it now. Either way, there was a Green Party leaflet that was in sort of a foreign Islamic language, and that's what they went really, really hard in on. And we'll go into that a bit more as the night goes on, what they actually stood for. So let's have a look before we go any further into the demographics of the area. So we know what happened. The Green Party won. It was disastrous for the main two. Reform came second. But to understand really how this happened, let's have a look at the demography of Gorton and Denton. So I'm going to bring this up now. Gorton and Denton constituency map and boundary. That's pretty meaningless to us, but it gives sort of the population by age group. But here's the important thing. Population by ethnic group. Now, the constituency was 51.13% white British, but that was in 2021. Now, we know that the British or the white British share of the population has been declining by 0.8% every year since, on average, since 99 2000 up to 24-25. And between and since the last census, we've seen this massive Boris wave, which wasn't accounted for obviously in the last census because it happened after it, but that was the largest wave of immigration that any government has ever brought in, and that obviously isn't accounted for here either. So I don't think I'm reaching or overstating it when I say that by now white Britons are definitely a minority group in Denton. And the Pakistanis make up, or at the last census, made up the second largest group with 19.21% of the vote. I should imagine that's increased as well since the last census. So what we see here is, although that white Britons are now a minority in Gorton and Denton, they are still the largest single group, with the second largest group being the Pakistanis. Now, the next largest group is the Africans, then Bangladeshis, then other whites, then any other ethnic group, then the Irish and the Caribbean, then mixed race, white and black Caribbean, then Arab, other Asian, Indian, other black, etc., etc. But you can see the two largest groups here are white Britons, who will now probably be, I would assume, around 48%. Maybe 47%, and the Pakistanis, who are 19.21% at the time of the census, but they are usually underreported in the census. So I should assume they are now somewhere around 22 to 24% of the constituency. So it's interesting to note that whilst white Britons are no longer a majority in Gorton and Denton, they are absolutely not an outright minority. They are not the smallest group. They are the largest group. So they are not they're not down there with sort of like Indians, other black, other Asian in the sort of 1% category. They will be around the high 40% mark. So what can we tell from this? Well, if whites, shall we say, if white Brits had voted along racial lines and voted for, on the whole, an anti-immigration party, probably Reform, then, or any other anti-immigration party that had stood, if white Britons had voted together as a bloc, they would have been the group that decided the election. But we're going to find out that that sadly wasn't the case. Now, there's something else here. Gorton and Denton. This is the religious breakdown of Gorton and Denton. And this is obviously from the last census. Again, the census in 2021 said Christians made up 41% of the constituency and Muslims made up 29.6% of the constituency, with no religious affiliation making up 27.7%. Now, obviously, I think that will have changed over time. Undoubtedly, the Christian population will have declined, and accordingly, I should imagine the Muslim population is now over 30%. But because it's close to 30%, we're going to stick at 30% for the rest of this analysis. So you can see here that this is one of those constituencies where you could say it's an ethnic battleground. It's a battleground where ethnicity matters at the polling station, where ethnic voters who stick together will have a disproportionate role in the way, or will play a disproportionate role in the way the election will go. And I've spoken about this before. I've talked about these multi-ethnic sectarian societies. And I think Gorton and Denton is a perfect example of what I've spoken about in the past. It's a multi-ethnic sectarian area where people stay in their own areas. And there are more detailed maps. I'm not going to go into them all because it'd be quite laborious and maybe a little bit boring. But there are a number of maps out there that show that the Pakistani area and the white area don't really intersect. They are very much separate areas. So you have like the Muslim areas, you have the white areas, and they are very, very different. They cluster in different areas, and there are different needs and different wants in those different areas. So accordingly, the Greens spent a lot of time campaigning in the Muslim areas, and they delivered leaflets that were not in English as well. That's very important. And they also delivered leaflets that did quite a bit of scaremongering. And one of the leaflets I have got, I'll just bring this up 2 seconds. It's in another window. So let me just bring this up. It's you can see the sort of, you can see that when you see this, you'll see the sort of thing that they were doing. So here it is on the screen. Your choice on the 26th of February. Dangerous far right reform. And there's a picture of Trump and Farage together, supported by Tommy Robinson, wants to sell off the NHS, risks giving Trump the keys to Britain. Green, Hannah Spencer, obviously they're in black and white. She's in colour. She's bigger. Born and raised in Manchester. Plumber and councillor. Here's this plumber thing they keep going on about. Someone who will put our area first. Hannah Spencer, the local plumber who can stop reform, you know. So this is just one of the leaflets, and it plays on the fact of, you know, fears about Tommy Robinson, fears about Trump, fears about people wanting to stop immigration. It doesn't exactly say that. It talks about selling off the NHS. I don't think Farage has ever said he wants to sell off the NHS, but tell me if I'm wrong there. He might have had a mental moment where he said something stupid like that. I don't know. But that's the kind of thing they were going into. And before the election was held, the constituency obviously was separated along ethnic lines to some degree, with certain ethnic groups standing together and certain ethnic groups being divided. And look, without giving you spoilers, you can tell that the whites were divided, white Britons were divided, but the Muslims worked together. And when you have a situation like that, when 30% of the constituency is Muslim and they all decide to vote for the same candidate, well, at a 50% turnout, you know they're going to win. Because if they're 30% of the population and 50% turnout and they all vote, they get 60% and they win every time. That didn't work out exactly like that. Obviously, some of the people in the constituency would be young, wouldn't be able to vote, some may not be registered. But we'll see how powerful the Muslim vote was in a minute, because there's also been accusations of cheating, which we are going to get onto. But let's look at the results in full. But let's also look at the endorsements, because this was seen as a bit of a national battleground. So let's check this out. Now, the endorsements were as follows. Advance UK was actually endorsed by Tommy Robinson. Tommy Robinson actually endorsed two parties in this, which is interesting. The Labour Party was endorsed by the Alliance for Workers and the Communist Party. Vince Cable, the former leader of the Liberal Democrats, advocated a tactical vote for Labour. Reform was also endorsed by Tommy Robinson. However, Reform and Matt Goodwin, the candidate, rejected said endorsement. But the Green Party had a huge amount of endorsements. They were endorsed by Jeremy Corbyn, the leader of the Your Party, an MP for Islington North. They were endorsed by the Morning Star, the newspaper. They were endorsed by the Muslim Vote, which is a pressure group, endorsed by Socialist Worker, the newspaper and the organisation. Zara Sultana, MP for... Zara Sultana, I love that name. Zara Sultana for Coventry South, and also a co-founder of Your Party. They supported the Greens. And Salma Yacoub, former leader of the Respect Party. So you have a lot of Muslims and leftists ganging up together to support the Green Party and rejoin the EU. Another minor party was endorsed by Volt UK, which is an anti-Brexit political party. But I think that's pretty neither here nor there. And it goes on to talk about tactical voting. Two tactical voting organisations, Forward Democracy and Tactical Vote, endorsed voting for the Green Party as the party best placed to defeat reform. So you can already see that the left are endorsing some or engaging in some pretty shady behaviour in order to ensure that reform can't win these by-elections. And it goes on to say, a Labour campaign leaflet delivered in the constituency the day before the election claimed that an organisation called Tactical Choice had recommended voting Labour. No such organisation appears to exist, and the Green Party accused Labour of making up an entirely fictitious organisation. Well, you know, that's how it goes. But anyway, we're going to skip all this. You can read this if you want, but I'm using Wikipedia for a reason. You might be saying, it's lazy using Wikipedia. Well, no, it's not. Wikipedia actually has the best and most detailed information on previous elections of any site I've ever found. Really, really good stuff, actually. And I've got to commend Wikipedia for this. And I regularly use Wikipedia when I'm doing sort of number crunching to do with elections. And I'll tell you this, the BBC, I mean, this isn't going to surprise anyone, but the BBC is actually very disingenuous. The BBC often edits out the votes that the smaller parties get. So you saw that on their website, actually. In fact, I can flick back there. Give me 2 seconds. So if you go back to the BBC site, the BBC only lists 5 candidates as if the rest didn't even really exist. But the rest do exist, and they're listed here. And we're going to go down them, and we're going to talk a little bit about each one. And we're going to talk about what this election means for them. So we're going to start with the Greens, Hannah Spencer. They were the winners should we start at the bottom? What do you think we should do? Do you think we should go up or down? We should start at the bottom, actually, because this is that'll probably make more sense. Otherwise, we'll end up talking about crap last and everyone will get bored. So we'll go through the really terrible results first. The worst of the worst, 29 votes for the Communist League. Now, at this point, you've got to ask yourself, why are the Communist League standing in this election? 29 votes. Now, for those who don't know, you need 10 signatures in order to stand in an election. And these guys didn't even get 3 times the number of signatures in votes. So absolutely pathetic, pointless. The next is the Social Democratic Party. Now, quite a lot of people, and this was a guy called Sebastian Moore. Now, a lot of people have said to me that the SDP are a good party, that they have good vote, they have good policies, that they're anti-immigration, that we should sort of engage with them, that they've got the perfect manifesto. All sorts of stuff I hear about these, but you can see how popular they actually are. 46 votes, 0.1%. I mean, absolutely horrendous. Another navel-gazing party came, just beat the SDP by one whole vote. This was the Libertarian Party, a guy called Dan Clark, 47 votes. Again, completely pitiful. And then to round out the parties that got under 100 votes and were in the laughable category, you have Rejoin EU, Joseph O'Meara. Well, they got 98 votes, so still in the double figures, not even making triple figures, an absolute joke. To win a by-election, you need to be sort of in 5 figures. Respectable results are in 4 figures. But once you are going down to double figures, you're really scraping the barrel. You're wasting your time. And all these parties, the Communist League, the SDP, the Libertarian Party, Rejoin EU, they all completely failed. Now, the next party is actually quite interesting. It's Advance UK. Now, Advance UK stood a candidate called Nick Buckley, who is actually a bit of a local celebrity. And they stood on quite a hardline platform. In fact, they stood on the sort of platform that Rupert Lowe is advocating now. Yet they did horrendously. They got just 154 votes. Absolutely terrible. Absolutely terrible. Embarrassing, in fact. And looking at this, you will have, or the astute amongst you, or those who've read my telegram earlier today, will have seen that Advance UK, this is Ben Habib's party. Not only did they stand the local celebrity, not only did they fight it on a hardline platform, not only did they have Tommy Robinson's backing, but with all those things going in their direction, they were beaten out by the monster raving loony party. Sir Oinkalot himself, yes, a guy in a pig mask calling himself Sir Oinkalot, stood and got 159 votes. So Advance UK, Ben Habib's hardline, supposedly hardline, Tommy Robinson-backed political party managed to get fewer votes than the monster raving loony party fronted by Sir Oinkalot. Now, you can laugh about this, and you probably should laugh because it is quite funny, but it tells you something about the political landscape. It actually tells you something about what might face Rupert Lowe further down the line. And you might say, well, look, Mark, Advance UK is folding. You know, they're probably going to roll in with Restore. Well, they're actually not. Ben Habib's attacked Rupert Lowe. We'll be talking about that later. But interestingly, this isn't the first time this has happened. Britain First stood in London in the GLA election, and they got thrashed. They actually got beaten by, I don't think it's the Monster Raving Loony Party, but it's a similar party, who put forward a guy called Count Binface, which is a guy in a costume that makes him look like a walking dustbin crossed with a superhero. So Britain First got beaten by Count Binface. They got laughed out of City Hall. And here, Nick Buckley, a local celebrity, a very well-known man in Manchester, standing for anti-immigration, remigration party, gets 154 votes and gets beaten by Sir Oinkalot. Now, whether or not you're laughing right now, this should be food for thought for all of those advocating a big return to electoral politics. I mean, I don't know how many thousands of pounds Advance spent on this campaign, because we don't have the election returns in yet. The election returns will tell us how much each candidate spent. But when those election returns are made public, let's say Advance UK spent £4,000 on this election campaign, and if they had a leaflet, an A4 leaflet delivered to every door, and they stood and they put up a deposit, which they'll have had to, that would probably be about £3,000 worth of spend already. So with a few billboards, maybe Ben Habib turning up and doing a bit of canvassing, it's not inconceivable that they spent £4,000 or £5,000 on this. Well, you might as well have got that £4,000 or £5,000 and put it on a bonfire and burnt it, or gone and bought something you really wanted. You know, they could have sent it to me and I could have bought some Super Nintendo games. I mean, that would have been a much better use of that money than getting 154 votes. Absolutely embarrassing. And we will come back to this embarrassment later, trust me. Next up is Sir Oinkalot, joke candidate, 159 votes. But when the joke candidate is beating Advance, Rejoin, the Libertarians, the SDP and the Communist League, that tells you about the public's perception of these micro parties. Now, all of those parties, Advance, Rejoin, Libertarian, SDP and the Communist League, they should all just shut up shop and walk away. Any person representing those parties who are now telling the public they have a serious chance of gaining any form of power is a con man. Well, let me retract that. They're either a con man or they are a certifiable idiot who fundamentally needs their head reading. That's all you can really say at this point. So there we have it. Anyway, let's go to the next candidate up. The next candidate, the first person to beat Sir Oinkalot, was Jackie Pearcey of the Liberal Democrats with 653 votes. Now, that's 1.8%. Horrendous. And they are down 2% from the last time they stood in Gorton and Denton. Now, you might not think this is significant, but it is massively significant. And I'll tell you why. Look forward to Uncle Mark telling you one of his stories. Well, the UK Parliament was traditionally a two-party oligarchy, Labour and Conservatives. But the third party was the Liberal Democrats. And the Liberal Democrats were known largely for one thing, and that was being the kings of by-elections. So the Liberal Democrats in the mid-2000s, when I was highly active in electoral politics in the BNP, the Liberal Democrats were a very, very active political party. They did very well, and they had the slickest, most professional and best funded by-election machine in the country. And wherever they turned up, they put the fear into both Labour and the Conservatives. And they were also very good at being what's known as a chameleon party. So they said what they needed to say at any given time. And they said what they needed to say, and it worked out for them. If you look back to the era of a New Labour between 2000 and 2010, the Lib Dems were the by-election kings. And they did so well, in fact, that at the general election in 2010, they won enough seats to form a coalition government with the Conservatives. David Cameron went into coalition government with the Lib Dems. I think that was under Nick Clegg's leadership, and he was Deputy Prime Minister. That was really the pinnacle of the Lib Dems' power. And they've waned a bit since then, but to see them drop down to a pitiful 1.8% of the vote, that's kind of, you know, the territory you would expect, or you would have expected, sort of a smaller nationalist party to occupy, you know, in the 2000s, early 2000s. Next is the Conservative Party, and they were down 6%. So last time they got 7.9%, which is not brilliant, but it is respectable. But again, Lib Dems and the Conservatives both lost their deposit. You need to get 5% to save your deposit. And the Conservatives got a pitiful 706 votes, lost their deposit, and were pushed into fourth place. And as I said earlier, at a by-election like this, you'd expect the Conservatives, being the party of opposition and Labour being so unpopular, to be making, if not gains here, coming close, a close second, and scaring the Labour Party, but they were absolutely shattered and destroyed. Now, technically, the worst vote of the night, not in terms of raw votes, but the worst vote of the night was actually the Labour Party vote with Angeliki Stogia. I believe that's how it's pronounced. I don't believe that's how it's pronounced. That's how I'm pronouncing it, you know. I don't really care. She got 25.4%, which sounds respectable, but they were down 25.4%. And I didn't get that wrong. They got 25.4%, but were down 25.4%. So last time they got 50.8%. Their vote or share of the vote was cut in half, absolutely thrashed. And for Labour, this is one of the worst by-election defeats in their history. And as I said earlier, they've held this seat for well over 100 years. And this is something I've talked about. I said that what we're going to increasingly see is people to the left of Labour taking the Islamic vote, whether that be your party, whether it be the Greens as an outside choice, George Galloway's party, but that's really fallen by the wayside. He's just sort of trapped in a cycle of making videos on YouTube. He's not really involved in anything political at the moment, I believe. But Labour are being pushed out by parties to the left of them who are more radical, appeal to the sort of really toxically liberal left-wing anti-white left, and also appeal to Muslims and ethnic minorities. And this is a sure sign of this. So Labour have done disastrously. And this might well cost Keir Starmer his job, because Keir Starmer has been on a massive downward trajectory ever since the general election, where he won a stunning majority. But if you remember, there were underlying problems with that majority. On paper, it looked amazing because it was a massive majority. But that was gifted to him. He actually got fewer votes than Jeremy Corbyn at the previous general election. So in terms of public support, he actually had less public support than Jeremy Corbyn. But because of the quirks of the first-past-the-post system and the Tories doing so badly and being so utterly despised, despite his poor showing in terms of the raw number of votes, the Conservatives did so badly, it gifted him that massive majority. So we've talked about the quirks of the first-party system before. So this could cost Keir Starmer his seat. And Angela Rayner has already come out and attacked Keir Starmer and said, look, you know, Labour need to become more radical. We need to shift to the left. They call her the Red Queen. And we're going to discuss this briefly. So this was covered in the Daily Mail. Reeling Starmer says he will fight on after by-election humiliation at the hands of the Greens as Angela Rayner leads demand for lurch to the left. Floundering Keir Starmer insisted he will fight on today after being humiliated by the Greens in a disastrous by-election. Angela Rayner is among those demanding change as critics insisted Sir Keir is personally culpable for the worst possible result in Gorton and and Denton. It's not the worst possible. I mean, they could have ended up, you know, getting beaten by Sir Oinkelot, but it wasn't that bad. But the PM tried to front up the anger this morning, playing down the meltdown as a disappointing setback for a government in mid-term. He also shrugged off condemnation for blocking Andy Burnham from being the Labour candidate and dodged directly addressing whether he had considered quitting. The Greens had never won a parliamentary by-election or a seat in the North, but Hannah Spencer romped home with a 4,400 majority. Despite flooding the area with ministers and 1,000 activists, Labour did not even have the consolation of second place, with its candidate trailing in behind Reform's Matt Goodwin. Nigel Farage camped up. We'll get to this bit in a second. So you can see here, this has caused major problems for the Labour Party and is actually something which has been a massive, massive embarrassment. They fought a very strong campaign, but that makes it actually even worse, because the more effort you put in, the better your vote should be. And if you're having 1,000 activists bust in, including leading ministers and the prime minister himself, you would expect to win. They didn't win. And it tells you something about their toxic position toward the Muslim community because of their policies on Israel and Gaza and the massacre there. And that was really what won it for the Greens. Now we'll go on to Reform, Matt Goodwin. Now, Matt Goodwin has got a Substack. It's actually a pretty good Substack. I actually read what he says. He usually writes pretty good articles. He got 28.7% of the vote, 10,578 votes, and they were up 14.6. So he did really well. And interestingly, Farage has come out and talked about cheating. And this is very interesting because we're going to read this. Nigel Farage confirms Reform report family voting to police and election authorities after concerns raised in Gorton and Denton. Reform UK leader Nigel Farage said the party has reported cases of family voting in the Gorton and Denton by-election to the Police and Electoral Commission. Comes after election observer group Democracy Volunteers warned it had witnessed concerningly high levels of family voting, an illegal practice where two voters use one polling booth and potentially direct each other on voting. Reform finished second place in yesterday's by-election by the Green Party. Reform UK leader Nigel Farage MP said, Reform has today reported that many cases of family voting to the Electoral Commission and the police. What was witnessed yesterday is deeply concerning and raises serious questions about the integrity of the democratic process in predominantly Muslim areas. This is very, very interesting because he's not the only person who has said this. Kemi Badenoch has also said this. She said, Kemi Badenoch says Labour bitten by its own monster of mass harvesting Muslim votes after Green by-election victory marred by allegations of illegal family voting sees Farage calling the police. So Kemi Badenoch has actually said that this is an issue. Farage has called it cheating. And tougher legislation known as the Ballot Secrecy Act was introduced in 2023 in a bid to clamp down on the practice that made it clear it was an offence. So just to explain what this is, Muslims turn up en masse to the polling booth. Often the wife or members of the family won't speak English, and the husband marches them up to the little polling booths and ensures that they fill out the vote in the way that he sees fit. And sometimes this isn't just the wife. Sometimes this could be elderly relatives. Sometimes this could be his children. But this is known as family voting. It is illegal. It's seen as coercive. And we've already seen this in Muslim areas, not just the issue of family voting, but the issue of ballot paper stuffing, the issue of postal vote fraud. And I'm not saying ballot paper stuffing or postal vote fraud went on at these elections, but this is the kind of thing that happens in these areas. And it may have happened on a wide scale. It may have happened sporadically. But these things tend to happen in Muslim areas. And you also get people abusing the proxy vote system. Now, this could be interesting. Could Reform have won if there wasn't this practice? Could Reform have won? I don't know. It was a 4,400 vote majority. That's a big majority to overturn. But it is very interesting that they are talking about this. I think Reform ran a good campaign. I've seen some nationalists criticise Reform and say the reason they didn't win is because their campaign wasn't ethnocentric enough. I disagree with that. I think that's a fundamentally bad take. And the reason I think that's a fundamentally bad take is because that's the campaign Nick Buckley ran on for Advance UK, and he got 154 votes and was beaten by Sir Oinkelot. I don't think Reform were defeated here by a bad campaign or unpopularity. Reform were defeated here. So look, potential reform voters in this ward were the people who voted reform, maybe those who voted conservatives, definitely the 154 who voted for Advance UK, and maybe a few reform voters stayed at home for one reason or another. But it's clear they ran a decent campaign to get where they did. But I think what defeated reform was the fact that the constituency is 30% Muslim, and there were some voting irregularities. So this could tell you a lot about how race, ethnicity and religion will play out or affect elections as future general elections play out over the coming years. And this should be very worrying for parties like Reform, certainly very worrying for anyone who is a nationalist, because it's clear to see that the message, the most anti-immigration message with a credible candidate and a credible party backing it, could not win despite white people, white Britons being the largest ethnic group in the constituency. Very worrying. Now on to the last. Obviously, we know Hannah Spencer won. Hannah Spencer's vote, a percentage share of the vote, was 40.7. They were up 27.5%, an incredible increase. And they took 14,980 votes. So she did very well. And this will catapult the Greens forward, essentially as the party now. Not Corbyn's your party, but the Greens will be seen as the party that can take on Labour from a left-wing point of view. And that is very interesting. And we've already seen people within the Labour Party starting to reach out to the Greens, talking about the possibility of a Green Labour coalition government, which would be the most toxic government you could imagine. Now, look, I'm going to say this. The Green Party are disgusting. Their leader is a Jewish homosexual. They go under this pro-Gaza stance, which has won them a lot of the Muslim vote, that's moved away from Labour because of what's happened in Gaza. But one thing you've got to look at and you've got to take on board that is very, very interesting on all of this is the Greens are appealing to two groups. They are appealing to the ethnic minority vote and the hardcore toxic left-wing vote. And when I say the hardcore toxic left-wing vote, I am talking about the pink-haired, multiple face piercing, anti-white, polyamorous, genderqueer, you know, femoid vote. That is what we are talking about. Those kind of freaks that you see joining groups like Antifa, you know, student anti-right-wing organizations, socialist workers, etc. Those, and you saw this with the backings who backed this party. This is a very dangerous party. They are vehemently anti-white, and them winning this election should be a real concern, because if they got anywhere near government, any ethno-nationalist group would be outlawed. People would be getting gulagged. We'd have full open borders. Your kids would just be basically prey for the LGBTQIA, whatever they're called now, paedophile lobby, and also ethnic minority groups that wanted to prey on them. This would be the worst thing ever. It'd be open borders, and it'd be everything that we would rightfully call out and fear happening. You don't want them in power. The people that should have won this election, whether you like reform or not, that would have been the best likely outcome. You could say, well, actually, Advance UK with Nick Buckley, they would have been far better. Look, mate, if you're saying that, pull your head out your backside. They got 154 votes and got beaten by Captain Oinkalot. Oh, no, Sir Oinkalot. Sorry, it's Count Binface and Sir Oinkalot. I get occasionally get mixed up in my old age. Sir Oinkalot. That's brilliant. Anyway, so really, a bit of a disastrous night. But before we go into the analysis, I want to talk about how this is going to affect Restore. So we now have Restore Britain, Rupert Lowe's party. Now, before we go into this, I'm going to pour a little bit of cold water on all of this. I'm going to say the following. Rupert Lowe's party is not a party. As of yet, it is not a political party. Before anyone starts crying, before anyone starts moaning, before anyone starts, you know, going berserk about what I've just said, it is not a political party yet. It hasn't registered. It hasn't been registered with the Electoral Commission. Apparently, the Electoral Commission at the moment, I've spoken to somebody who knows about this, they've got a 6-month backlog with political party applications. So if Rupert Lowe got his application in a couple of weeks back, you've got still March, April, May, June, July, August. He's going to be passed sometime in August. And that's if it gets through the first time. The Electoral Commission may seek to block Restore Britain on a couple of points. Firstly, its name. There are other parties named similar things to Restore Britain. And secondly, they might block it because of its policy points or a constitutional issue. And as of yet, Rupert Lowe hasn't come forward with a constitutional, not one that I've seen. He's claiming now he has 95,000 members, which, if true, is truly incredible. And obviously, you know, I do like him, and to some degree, you know, well, totally wish he would be. It'd be great for him to be, you know, Prime Minister. But I don't really see that happening. And I don't see that happening for a couple of reasons. The first reason is what we saw at this election. So we've got Ben Habib, we've got Tommy Robinson, we've got Nick Buckley, we've got this drive for Advance UK. They stood on an ethno-nationalist ticket. They got absolutely humiliated. They didn't really dent the Reform vote. Now, my concerns have always been that you're going to have, you know, Reform 400 votes off beating the Greens, and someone like Advance UK gets 550 votes, and you look at it and say, well, it's their fault. It's Nick Buckley and Ben Habib's fault. That wasn't the case. 154 votes, absolutely pitiful, and it didn't really have any effect on the election. All it did was waste a lot of money. So the first thing I'm going to point out is, despite Rupert Lowe's supposed 95,000 members, which, if true, is absolutely incredible. I'm not sure if they're all even living in the UK. I know Jared Taylor in the US has joined them, but who knows? Let's say it is absolutely factual and, you know, 90,000 of them live in the UK. They would shortly put on a better campaign than Advance UK. But we saw what happened with Advance UK, and we've seen this many times before. Ethno-nationalist parties poll less than impressive numbers at the best of times, but when they're up against a soft populist right candidate like a Reform Party candidate, or back in the day a UKIP candidate, or in the interim a Brexit Party candidate, the Brexit Party UKIP Reform candidate does much better. I'm not saying that to hurt your feelings. Look it up. If I'm wrong, send in a super chat and go, hey Mark, you've got this wrong. I don't think I have got this wrong. I know I was there. I lived it. I was a BNP candidate who had to sit there gritting his teeth as the results came in, and UKIP got another 6-7%, saved their deposit, and the BNP got 2-3% and lost theirs. Very disappointing. Happened regularly. This is a reality. But the other issue is, I'm doing something here. I'm fiddling about with something, and it is my headphones, because I do need to listen to this next bit. Didn't have my headphones in because so far I haven't played anything, but I do need to play this. There's already been an explosion of infighting. Now, the other week I did a big breakdown about Restore Britain, and I talked about the potential for infighting and the potential for those on the populist right to fight themselves to a standstill. I made the comparison between the populist right in the UK and the White Army in Russia, who obviously lost to the Bolsheviks, not due to numerical might, but due to the fact they were so disunified. Well, Ben Habib, the leader of Advance, and remember last week, everyone's messaging me saying, look, it's going, mate, it's going. Ben Habib's already on board. He's closing down Advance. He's joined Rupert Lowe. Well, Ben Habib has already fallen out with Rupert Lowe. And this is something that, you know, might make friends again, but let's see. I'm going to play this because it's very interesting. And it's very interesting from someone's perspective who has been involved in nationalism for a while. So I'm going to tell you, this is Ben Habib's latest trick. You know, he obviously stood in Gorton and Denton to try and damage Nigel Farage. And now, Nigel Farage and Matt Goodwin, and this is him today, or a few days ago, talking about Rupert Lowe.
Since Rupert Lowe declared he was going to convert Restore Britain from a movement to political party. And it's been 8 days since I made an open offer on air to Rupert Lowe to consider a merger with Advance UK. I've had no response to that open offer. The only response made was in public by Rupert Lowe on X, in which he said I and members of Advance UK would be free to join Restore Britain. But here's the issue, Rupert.
Now, here's the actual issue. Here's the actual issue. Ben Habib here is making this all public. So Ben Habib says, I would like to merge with Restore UK. And Rupert Lowe publicly says, well, you're free to join if you want, and we'll go from there. Which is a reasonable point to make. You're free to join. Why should it be a merger? Why should it be some coalition? Does Rupert Lowe want to merge? Rupert Lowe's claiming he's got 95,000 members. Don't have any reason to doubt him, whether they're all in Britain or not, it's another thing. How many's Advance UK got? 5,000? 10,000? They're welcome to join, he says. Fair. Ben Habib is immediately angered by this. And you can tell that Ben Habib has got some kind of chip on his shoulder. He has a little bit of main character syndrome. He can't just join, restore and be a member and turn up at a meeting. He has to go into coalition. Or some form of merger has to take place that gives him some power. And you can see here, he's not willing to just be a soldier and work his way up. He has to be in at officer level from day one. And if not, he's going to play this all out in public. So he's not, look, this guy's got Rupert Lowe's number. He could ring him up. He could go to Parliament and speak to him. He could arrange a meeting with him, but he's doing all this publicly. So let's go on.
I don't know what Restore Britain is. I've had a look at your website, but there's no draft constitution there. Nothing setting out how the leadership is appointed, how the leadership is held to account, how policies are made, how people to your policy-making committees are appointed, how you're going to set up your national network, how people are going to be recruited into the party. None of this is clear on your website. There's no draft constitutional document.
There's no draft constitutional document. Now, I'm going to tell you this, and this is going to be a bit of my wisdom for you. Whenever you hear a man talking like this, they are a splitter, a stirrer, a trouble causer, and they are hungry for power for themselves. This is something that you should not underestimate. Every split I have ever seen in the nationalist movement has had someone on the side of the splitters talking about, why isn't the constitution democratic enough? How do we appoint members to policy committees? How do you select people to sit on the leadership? How could we vote you out if you went mad? All of these things are the points raised by splitters. And I know this. This is exactly the kind of crap that Kenny Smith came out with when he conned people into joining the Homeland Party, which obviously now has completely collapsed and is irrelevant. It was, oh, where's PA's democracy? How do we vote Mark out if we need to? How do we appoint people to local organizer roles? Is there going to be democracy? You know, we need at least some kind of mechanism to vote people in and vote people out. Then as soon as some slob like Kenny Smith sets up his own group, where's the democracy? Well, it's nowhere. He just expels people. He kicks people out like Steve Laws, expels all the people who left PA to be with him because they've said, well, Kenny, weren't we doing this for democracy? We're not doing it for democracy now because, you know, the slob's in charge. And this is exactly what Ben Habib's doing. Everything he's saying here is disingenuous. Everything he's saying here is to imply that Rupert Lowe is a new dictator in the making. And everything he's saying here is not because he wants a transparent, democratic, constitutional movement, because he wants to be part of it and he wants to ensure there is some kind of mechanism so that if he enters the party, he can stir up trouble, cause problems and shoehorn himself into a position of power, because this guy has to have power. And that's why he fell out with Nigel Farage, and this is why he's going to fall out with Rupert Lowe.
Document. The only document about which I'm aware are the Articles of Association of your country, what you've got on Companies House, and that shows a company limited by one share, private limited company, limited by one share, which you own, Rupert. You are the owner and dictator of Restore Britain.
Dictator! I told you!
And people need to know that you don't believe in a democratic political party. You've said that to me yourself, and your own spokesman have been on air for the last week saying that actually Rupert Lowe can be trusted to get this done. We don't need a democratic process. I think one of your spokesmen referred to you as Caesar, which is a completely ridiculous turn of phrase, if you don't mind me saying so. The only way the democracy of this country can be restored is through a democratic process. No dictatorial political party will restore our democracy. That's where reform went so wrong. Reform was Farage, Farage was reform. It still is, whatever he might say. And if Restore Britain is going to be Lowe and Lowe is going to be Restore Britain, you too will fail. And
see, this is it. This guy's upset because Nigel Farage is the man at the head of reform. And now he's upset that Rupert Lowe is the man at the head of Restore. And the only way to sort out all the messes that democracy has brought to the UK, and let's face it, come on, guys, let's put this on the nose. Democracy has screwed the UK. The democratic system has failed. It's created a two-party oligarchy. First past the post is an absolute joke. The quirks of first past the post make it completely useless. It tends towards a two-party system where you vote for the lesser of two evils. That's why there's all the organisations we talked about earlier, like Tactical Vote, etc. Total crap. But this guy, the only way to fix this horrible, corrupt democracy is by creating a mini version of that horrible, corrupt democracy so that I, a half Pakistani, can take control of Britain's anti-immigration party. This guy, is he for real? It's absolute crap. And I've heard this. This is the kind of thing Nick Griffin said when he took the BNP off John Tyndall. This is the kind of thing countless splitters said when they tried to take the BNP off Nick Griffin. This is the kind of nonsense people said when they flounced off and set up Homeland, only to end up with a fat, stuttering, monstrous dictator themselves, you know, eating kebabs and punching people out on nights out for all his young followers to fill. This is the talk of a trouble causer. And I've heard people say, BNP, he seems like a nice guy. This guy's not a nice guy. I'm telling you that. I'll tell you that for free.
That would be disastrous for this country. We've got one chance to save this country. It needs to be done through serious principled politics. It can't be done through a dictatorship at Restore Britain. Now, the other thing which isn't clear is, what is Restore Britain? What is its constitution? That's not clear. What do you believe in? What's your political philosophy? I can tell you our political philosophy. We believe in the nation state of Great Britain and Northern Ireland in all its parts and for all its people. The restoration of our Christian constitution and culture. The restoration of our freedoms, freedom from indoctrination of our children, freedom of speech. The restoration of our democracy, which can only be done democratically. Getting rid of the international institutions out of the fabric of our country, getting rid of all the domestic bureaucracies and quangos that have got in the way of holding our elected officials to account, and restoring our criminal justice system so that we have equality under the law. That's what we believe in. It's very clear. It's set out in our constitutional documents, but I don't know what you believe in. And I'm labouring this point because in the last week, there's been what I can only regard as a tilt towards ethno-national sort of sound bites from some of your spokesmen. I'm not for a second suggesting that you're prejudiced based on the colour of someone's skin or that they are. I'm not suggesting that. But ethno-nationalism, which effectively means in the United Kingdom, English nationalism, Scottish nationalism, Welsh nationalism and Ulster nationalism, will end up breaking the United Kingdom. If those are the voices you...
And here it comes down to the fact. He wants power and he doesn't want ethno-nationalism. Ben Habib, who is half Pakistani and half English, he does not want ethno-nationalism. And why doesn't he want ethno-nationalism? Because he is not totally Pakistani and he's not totally English. So he doesn't feel at home around ethno-nationalists. So because he doesn't feel at home around ethno-nationalists, he wants to create some convoluted democratic structure, some wordy, fangled constitution that gives him a place so that he can decide what makes us British. And he said lots of good things there. You know, Britain is fairness in the courts, it's freedom of speech, it's freedom of association. Those things are all true, but all of those things came from the indigenous people. They came from the English, the Scottish, and the Welsh. They didn't spring out of thin air. They weren't imported. They weren't gifted to us from other races or other ethnic groups. We came up with them. They were birthed by our people, and our people were birthed by this land. And the fact is, he can't understand this because he is not one of us. And you can see already he's getting very worried about this. He doesn't like Farage because Farage is apparently the dictator. He doesn't like Rupert Lowe because Rupert Lowe is the ethno-nationalist dictator. And this is something I warned about. I warned about the trouble that was coming. And people can write this guy off and say, oh, no one listens to Ben Habib. Yes, they do. He's a very influential person. But should he be a very influential person within nationalist circles when he is not one of us and is clearly uncomfortable talking about the preservation of our people? If I went to Pakistan and decided that I was going to run for government, it would be right for the Pakistani people to say, well, you're not one of us. You're not part of us. You're not indigenous to this land. You don't think like us. You know, you're an outsider. He is, unfortunately, the same, but he wants to subvert the ethno-nationalist movement. He will fall out with everyone, and his talk is talk of creating an organization that is so full of red tape, bureaucracy, and other horrible, horrible constitutional nonsense. So the organization is not fluid. It cannot act. There is a vote on everything. That's why one of the reasons why Britain is being wrecked. And he wants every organization to be like that so he can hold it up when they stand for things that he feels are uncomfortable.
Want to give voice to, you will end up breaking the United Kingdom. You will deliver for the EU what it's been so desperate to do, which is our breakup. And mass migration, about which you're so concerned, is actually a move towards breaking up our country. The only way we can stand tall, the only way we will restore the United Kingdom, see off these forces that wish to destroy us, is by standing together. We can't have any form of ethno-nationalism as an agenda. It will end up defeating our very aim of a sovereign, proud, prosperous United Kingdom. It can't happen. So Rupert, if you want a merger with Advance UK, I don't suppose you do, but if you want any coming together of our membership or me or anything, you've got to make your position clear. And let me just tell you what my position is. I made a commitment when I set up Advance UK that I would lead it, and I would stand true, stand firm, stand with fortitude, would not bend in any opposition. I would not bend to any opposition until I delivered our mission statement. And I declared that again today to all our members and to everyone listening. I will not bend. I will not give in. I will stand for this country until my last breath is given. So if you want any accommodation with us, Rupert, if you care for the country, Rupert, do the right thing. Make your position clear. Don't be a clickbait merchant. Adopt serious principled politics.
So here you have it. He's causing a lot of trouble here. But interestingly, Advance UK have over 40,000 members. So Rupert Lowe has 95,000. Advance UK has 40,000. Advance UK just got 154 votes. How many? I've lost the percentage. They got 154 votes. They didn't get anywhere near 1%. They got 0.4% in that election, 154 votes. But they have 40,000 members. Now, that is a lot of members. Now, I don't know. Let me just work this out. How much does membership of Advance UK cost? Membership of Advance UK costs, oh my God. Have I got this right? No, it's £20 annually. £20 annually. Something else came up there on the AI that suggested he was charging up to £300 for membership. God, that would have been insane, wouldn't it? I nearly had a heart attack there. So this guy's raked in £800,000 in membership fees since he began Advance UK. And he has a massive number of members. Bear in mind, 40,000 members. is more than the British National Party had at its height, more than the National Front had at its height. National Front had 16,500 at its height. BNP had 14,500 at its height. So, you know, you've got basically 31,000 members between the National Front and the BNP if you merge them together at their height. Both of them together at their heights were nowhere near as big as Advance UK. But Advance UK only managed 0.4%. And this is something that people have got to take away. Unfortunately, what we've just seen here at the Gorton and Denton by-election is very, very bad for Restore UK. Or sorry, Restore Britain. They've all got UK or Britain in the name, sorry. So what can we learn here? Well, let's say, you know, Rupert Lowe's party is sort of over double the size of Ben Habib's. So what, Rupert Lowe's going to get 1%. Rupert Lowe's going to get 400 votes in one of these elections. That is what you could actually end up with. It's not even a party yet. And he's already now in a war with Ben Habib, which I believe is completely Ben Habib's fault, by the way. I don't think it's Rupert Lowe's fault. I'm not putting any shade. But this election tells you something about the challenges Restore Britain are going to face. And anyone telling you that Restore Britain is going to start winning seats, is going to start curb stomping reform, is going to start winning by-elections, it's not even going to be on the ballot paper for at least 6 months. And not only that, but it will probably end up on the ballot paper fighting at that lower part of the standings. It'll be there against Advance UK. It'll be there against the British Democrats, the English Democrats. It'll be in that milieu, unfortunately, of smaller parties. And when a party with 40,000 plus members can only get 0.4% of the vote and gets beaten by Sir Oinkalot, and there's already this trouble swirling around. What I'm saying, unfortunately, is we cannot put all our eggs in this Rupert Lowe basket. And I've been saying this. He's a good man. He deserves our support to some degree. Would he be an excellent prime minister? Yes. But unfortunately, what we're seeing here is we're seeing, if you like, we're reading the tea leaves, and you can see what is the likely potential future. And the fact that already this idea of an Advance, Restore sort of alliance, they're going to work together, they're going to merge, they're going to have 130 something thousand members. We can already see the trouble. And off the back of this, some people will be saying, oh, well, Reform didn't win it, they're finished. Reform aren't finished. Reform are most likely hampered by some kind of cheating. But what won this election was something quite simple. And it's that white people are screwed. And this is upsetting. I said it last week and I'm saying it again. White people are more concerned with not offending their ethnic minority friend than they are in the survival and well-being of their own ethnic group. The English people are so scared of being called racist. They're so scared of having their black colleagues say, oh, did you vote for that party? They're so scared of upsetting their non-white niece or nephew or grandchild that they will not stand for or vote for even a party that they think might offend members of ethnic minority communities. It's very, very sad. We have this suicidal empathy. And what screwed Reform in Gorton and Denton, what hurt Reform in Gorton and Denton, was probably two things. And they're both problems with white voters. So here's time for the black pill. Take the black pill because it's necessary. Two things happened in Gorton and Denton. Firstly, the white British voters did not stand together as an ethnic group. It's clear that the Muslims did. That's why the Greens won. But the white Brits were split. There was white Brits who voted Green. There were some white Brits who voted Conservative. There were some white Brits who voted for the Lib Dems. But interestingly, I should imagine that of those 9,000 and something Labour voters, many of them were elderly white Britons trapped in that area who have always voted Labour and see elections as nothing more than a political football match. You pick your team and you support them to the end. The flaws here that kept reform from winning were flaws with white people. Yes, the Muslim vote came together. Yes, the Muslim vote probably engaged in illegal practices, but they stuck together as one and they swung the election. And this is what I've been saying time and time again. In a multi-ethnic sectarian society, what happens is the groups that stick together and leverage their power win, and the groups that act like atomized individuals lose. They break up and they get preyed upon. And this is why reform didn't win. This is absolutely the truth. And if this carries on, and this plays out like this on a national level, there will be no voting a way out of this. And many people say there is no voting a way out of this. And I kind of agree. And my final take on this, my final big summation on this, what I think is this is exactly what I predicted. This is exactly what the multi-ethnic sectarian society that I've described many times over. I've said, there's not going to be a race war. There's not going to be an all-out battle. People aren't going to be manning the battlements. It's not going to be like Les Miserables, you know, manning the barricades along ethnic lines. It won't happen like that. It will break down and it will become like Northern Ireland, but across multiple different ethnic and religious lines. But unlike Northern Ireland, where both the Protestants and the Catholics had a massive degree of in-group preference, unfortunately, white Britons, despite being the biggest ethnic group, even when they become a minority, well, if they do become a minority, which is looking increasingly likely, they will still be the largest ethnic group, but they won't stand together. What we're seeing here is also a collapse of the centre ground, which is something else I predicted. The Tories are losing out. They're not an effective opposition. They're dying. Labour, they're still doing okay due to generational voting patterns. But if they don't get pulled to the left, the Greens will take the ethnic minority vote and chip away at them and leave them as a wounded animal. The Tories will be killed by reform and by elderly Tories dying out. Labour, on the other hand, won't die completely, but they will be mortally wounded. And here, I've got to say it, reform are not an explicitly pro-white party. Rupert Lowe would be an explicitly pro-white party if he gets registered and if he goes through with all this. And by the way, all this talk from Ben Habib that it's a limited company. Every party is underwritten by a limited company, and that's so you can't be sued as individuals. And what Rupert Lowe doesn't want is to set up a party, then the party says something, and because it's an unincorporated association and he is the head of it, when the party gets sued, he is the person who stands to lose all his personal wealth. By setting it up as a private limited company and having only one share, it means he controls it, but if anyone sues it, he is personally limited to just £1 worth of damages. So if the party gets sued for everything, he personally doesn't lose anything. That's completely understandable. But Restore would be an explicitly pro-white party. Reform, I say, is an implicitly pro-white party. Their policies are implicitly white, sort of like, you know, you can't be British if you haven't paid tax, you can't be British if you've not lived here 10 years, you can't be British if you committed criminal acts in the time you've lived here. That all discriminates indirectly against ethnic minorities, know that. But reform is not perfect. But when even an implicitly white party, not an explicitly, but even when an implicitly pro-white party, which is anti-immigration to some small degree, is struggling because 30% of the constituency is Muslim, that tells you how dangerous the situation we are in really is. Because Britain now is 70% white British, around 70% white British. That means 30% of the country comes from some sort of migrant background. We are rapidly approaching the point where unless white people are willing to, at the very least, stand together and vote for an implicitly white party like Reform, we're done. And the idea that they won't vote for the implicitly white party like Reform, but they're all going to absolutely vote for Restore, is just pure copium. These are real problems that we need to think about. And again, to round this out, that is why groups like Patriotic Alternative, the Woodlander Initiative, are so important. It's why groups like Remigration Now, that's a pressure group, is important, because this electoral route has yet again taught us one thing. It is open to so many forms of manipulation. First past the post is flawed. The democratic system is flawed. But it's all so easily manipulated by a highly motivated, ethnocentric group that stands together and that allows a group, Pakistanis, 20% of the constituency, Muslims as a whole, 30% of the constituency, it allows them to win. It allows them to take control, take power, and lock out the other, however you want to see it, 70 to 80% of the voters. It doesn't bode well, does it? Yet white Britons, who probably made up in that constituency around 48%, so disunified, so terrified of being called racist, so held in awe by generational voting patterns, they ended up losing out. This is a black pill, but unfortunately, we must swallow it if we're going to learn and move forward. Anyway, that's the end of the presentation. We have very, very few super chats tonight, but people were very, very generous on Wednesday. So I'm going to read the couple of super chats. If you want a super chat, get them in now, because obviously I'm going to call it a night if there are no super chats. Dawny B gave two cups, two winner's trophies, and gave $5. Thank you so much. And we have one super chat over on Rumble. As I said, a bit of a slow night tonight, but that's okay because we had a very good Wednesday. So thank you so much to people who donated over the week. And It Was Made Up gave $10. Thank you so much. So by these results, it appears the center has been destroyed and voters are incredibly polarized. How will this play out? Well, I completely agree. And that is an excellent super chat. The polarization that we are seeing now is actually extremely interesting. And I've said this before, that the center will collapse and we will see people pulled in two separate directions. And there will be this unholy alliance on the left of, you know, pink haired, you know, nose pierced, you know, rabid feminists, homosexuals, weirdos. And they will interestingly team up with the ethnic minorities to take on white Britons. Unfortunately, to the right, you will have Reform, Restore, Advance, the British Democrats, the English Democrats, what's left of the micro parties, which many of them didn't stand in this election, thank goodness. And that polarization, as I say, is going to decide who wins the next general election. But my big worry is, whereas the Greens will work with Labour and Labour will work with the Greens, what we will see here going forward is a situation where technically and most likely we will see white people being locked out of power if they are in any way pro-white, whether that be implicitly or explicitly. And that's what we're seeing here. And quite interestingly, Hazelnut gave $10. Thank you so much. That's over on Rumble. Thank you so much, Hazelnut, for your kind donation. I'm just reading that out now because it's just scrolling off the chat. I wanted to read it before it did. But what we are seeing here, unfortunately, is this ethnic battleground where the only people that are disunified are white Britons. The only people willing to vote against their own ethnic groups and their own ethnic interests are white Britons. And we, despite being the biggest group, are the ones destroying ourselves. You know, and I know that we've been led astray by other groups. We've been led astray by the media. I know. I've talked about this extensively. But a certain degree of the blame does fall on us. We are suffering from this suicidal empathy, and it is clearly hurting us at every level. And this election was an example of it. And no one else is going to give you this hard pill. No one else is going to talk about this election in this way. But the fact that Kemi Badenoch is starting, even Kemi Badenoch is starting to talk about the Muslim bloc vote because she knows she's never getting it, so she can talk about it, you know, tells you something that maybe Mark Collett was right all along. This is James L. gave $20. Thank you so much. And he says, my question under separate cover. Have you messaged me? Oh, you have. Yeah, sorry. He sent me a very long question over on text message. So I'm going to read this out on text message. Thank you, James. He says, as difficult it is for us to realise there is no voting our way out of this and that our people have had the democracy tables turned on us, an excellent presentation as usual, Mark, clearly Restore echoes PA's rhetoric. So given Lowe hasn't yet submitted his application to the Electoral Commission, how do you think Restore will fare with its application? Do you think he has more clout and backing, thus more likely to succeed? What if it fails? Well, I think the Electoral Commission will be looking for anything to turn down Restore Britain's application. And there'll be three ways they'll do this. The first will be the logo. The logo currently is the words Restore Britain and a little map of Britain. Now, is that legal? I don't know. They banned Patriotic Alternative for the logo and eventually we stopped submitting the logo. And they banned us for the logo because at first they said the logo contained a tick, which it does. I designed it. I didn't know you couldn't have a tick in your logo. If I did, I wouldn't have put a tick in it. Or I would have put a tick in it, but I wouldn't have put a tick in the logo that we submitted to the Electoral Commission. Secondly, we removed the tick and it just said Patriotic Alternative with a stylized V, which wasn't a tick, but was just like a V for victory. They turned that down as well, and they said you can't have Patriotic Alternative with a stylized V because it's essentially just the word Patriotic Alternative, and that's not allowed. So we're like, okay then. Then they said, what's your next chance? And I said, well, it's the letters PA, stylized. So you can't have that either because it's an abbreviation, and we don't allow abbreviations unless the abbreviations are well-known. I said, well, okay, here's 20 newspaper reports abbreviating us to PA. Well, we don't think that's enough to be well known enough. Well, the SDP have a logo which says simply SDP as big blackout block letters. Are the SDP, the Social Democratic Party, more well known than PA? And we proved that they weren't. There was no news items about them, but still, they didn't allow us. So they might go for Restore Britain on the fact it's their logo is simply the words Restore Britain. Like Reform has a proper logo, but Restore Britain is just a map of Britain and the words Restore Britain. So they could go for Restore Britain on the logo. The next thing they could go for Restore Britain for is the name. And they could say the name is confusing. Now, how could the name be confusing? Well, the name could be confusing because it sounds very similar to Reform. There could be another party out there with a very similar name. It could be something like, there could be another party called like Restore UK or I don't know. But you know what I mean? The name could be similar. Now, we didn't have that problem with Patriotic Alternative, but many parties are turned down because of the name. And the third thing they could be turned down for is their constitution. Their constitution and their policies could be seen as in breach of equalities rulings or what the Electoral Commission see as something you're just not allowed to stand on. And that was finally why we got turned down. So the final thing we were turned down for as a political party was the fact they said, although we had met all their requirements eventually in terms of logo, although we had met all their requirements eventually in terms of our constitution and our manifesto, they came back to us and said, we believe that although your constitution is technically legal, you will break your own constitution because we believe that you are being disingenuous. Essentially, they charged us with breaking our constitution before we'd even broken it. We never had a chance to break it because it never passed us. And they could do the same with that. Now, I think that Rupert Lowe will get the party through eventually, because Rupert Lowe is a multimillionaire. So bringing together £15,000 to £20,000 for a high court challenge, and he could bring together a lot more money to push it through a lot quicker. He could break the Electoral Commission. The Electoral Commission probably aren't as well funded as Rupert Lowe would be if he tried to take them to court. He could raise millions like that in a heartbeat. People would want to see the Electoral Commission ruined in court. And if he did that, there would be potentially a way forward for PA to be registered then. Not that we want to be registered, because we don't believe in the parliamentary route. But I think what we can see here is that Rupert Lowe, I think, will eventually get it registered, but there are a number of pitfalls that could hold him back. Anyway, that is the end of the Super Chats. Thank you to those who have Super Chatted. As I say, if anyone wants to get something in, you could get in your Super Chats now, if anyone wants to, but I don't think there's going to be. But thank you for those who did. Anyway, that brings us to the end of the stream. I'll be back on Sunday for the Nationalist 18, and I will also be back on Wednesday with Sam Melia for his first interview since he was released from prison. So that is going to be very, very interesting. Please tune in on Wednesday night. And remember, as always, if you want to donate when I'm offline, and you want it to contribute to February's amount, February's total, you can do that if you're watching this on replay. You can donate at any time through Entropy or through Rumble. Anyway, thank you so much. I hope you have a wonderful weekend, and I'll see you next week for Patriotic Weekly Review. Thank you, everybody. Good night.